Welcome to the Start Well podcast. I'm Dawn Thomas, your host. As a mother, financial advisor, and researcher, I know the importance of empowering young people on their financial journeys. Whether you're a parent, grandparent, or the coolest aunt or uncle, join me in exploring how impactful conversations about money can shape a young person's future. Let's harness their superpower of time and your superpower of influence to ensure they start well and continue to live well into the future. The information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your personal and financial objectives and situation. Before acting on any information discussed here, you should consider its appropriateness, having regard to your objectives, needs, and financial position. Today's episode of the Start Well podcast, I have the amazing Natasha Jansons, who wrote the book Wonder Woman's Guide to Money, The Busy Woman's Guide to Money Management and Wealth Building. Welcome to the podcast, Tash.
Oh, thank you so much, Dawn. I'm so excited to be chatting to you.
And Tash, I am your fan and I follow you with all the content. So listeners, if you really enjoy this discussion, I would say you can find Tash on various mediums and platforms, you know, because she's out there spreading the message of money and empowerment, you know, whether it's radio, podcasting, articles. And of course, Tash, you are the founder of Women with Sense. Tash, can you take us first with, just for our listeners to get to know you a bit more, you are really into empowering people with their money. What does that encompass?
So my background, actually, despite my accent, is I wasn't born or raised in Australia, and I migrated here when I was 18 without my parents. So coming from, you know, Eastern Europe and war zones, you know, that lack of money, you know, and financial instability was huge. So for me, then once I came to Australia and I started my career as an accountant, I just began to notice how, you know, even in Australia, even in a wealthy country, people were very, I don't know, detached from their money. They weren't, even those who I saw who had investments, they didn't understand the investments. They weren't particularly involved or proactive in it. You know, I remember talking with clients where, you know, they'd have some investment properties and their mortgage broker would restructure it. And I'm trying to figure out which bit's tax deductible. You know, this debt went from here to here, like what's going on? And they would just go, I don't know. And so from that, over the years, I think my frustration started to build and I thought, gosh, you know, people could do so much more if we could be more proactive with their finances. And as an accountant, I would see them at the end of the transaction, you know, a year later when it was like well and truly too late. So that then sort of prompted me to change careers and look at, you know, how can I support people to be more proactive and be, you know, more connected with their money and more intentional with it. So, you know, back to your question around what does that involve? For me, it really comes back to that, to be letting go of the shoulds around money. I don't know if you find the same thing with your clients, but I found when I was working as a financial planner, most people, men and women alike, you know, they would come to me quite often without clear goals. And if they had goals, it was, I want to grow my money by X, right? But if we went, okay, for what purpose and what else are you working towards? What do you want your life to look like? Often they didn't have the answer for it. And the biggest word that I kept hearing was, what should I be doing based on my income? What should I be doing based on my age? And for me, it's about empowering people to let go of that should and really run your own race and go, well, okay, first of all, let's figure out what you want to do with your money. And that will be about directing it in the way that's going to be most meaningful to you. So, yeah, I think if I could sum it up, that would be my take on what it means to, yeah, empower people to do well with their money.
Yeah, and you know, I get it from you that you are very genuine about this empowerment process. So you're finding a different ways that you can get out there and spread the message and engage with people. And this book, you know, Wonder Woman's Guide to Money, even though it was published in 2019, and a lot of other books have been released since then, amongst the finance community, especially the women in finance, this is a favorite book that comes up on their list. I mean, how do you feel about that, Tash, just having a book that is really well regarded by finance professionals?
Oh, I'm blown away to hear that. So thank you for letting me know. You know, I'm in Canberra. I'm sort of sitting here doing my own thing, sort of living in my own little bubble. And, you know, and I'm often not aware of what others are, you know, doing with regard to the book or thinking of it. So, I'm really touched, first of all. And yeah, and maybe a little bit proud that that's the case, because there's that inner, and I talk about in the book, you know, just as women, quite often in particular, we're in many ways conditioned by society to be perfectionists and to, you know, have to be the perfect wife and the house has to be perfect and all of that. So I still think and go, oh my gosh, the book is in 2019, you know, I'm mentally noting all the super changes and everything that's happened in the meantime. And I'm almost reluctant to mention the book anymore, because I go, I need to update that chapter, right? Mm. Even though I know that 95% of the book is still relevant and accurate for today. So yeah, so thank you for giving me that feedback and that encouragement as well.
Yes, so look, that's a very good point, because when I look at it, right, I'm not too bothered about what the rules are legislatively around superannuation and things like that, because that's something you can go to Money Smart, go to the ATO and actually get up-to-date figures. What I like about your book, and before I get to it, because I tend to like going through the chapters and then talking to our listeners about how they can bring that conversation up here, is that under your acknowledgement page, you said, when I first embarked on the Women with Sense journey, my vision was simple. I wanted every woman in Australia to have access to professional financial advice, regardless of age, income, or circumstances. I wanted women to have a safe place to learn and share without fear of judgment, ridicule, or hidden agenda. I didn't fully appreciate or anticipate the enormity of the challenge I had taken on, from the overwhelming red tape that encompasses the world of finance to the difficulty of getting women to take notice of financial matters. Those are two powerful paragraphs there, Tash, that you open with. Reflecting on that now, you have the book and we're going to go through that. But you've mentioned a few barriers there. There are barriers in the system where there's the red tape, and then there's the personal barriers of us as humans. Why is it so difficult getting women to take notice of financial matters?
Yeah, and it's something that I've tried to, you know, fix and resolve and address in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, I think we are pulled in so many different directions. So, you know, we've achieved gender equality in some sense, in that we now make up half of the workforce, and that's fantastic. But we haven't let go of everything else that comes with it. And so when you're then having to, you know, be earning an income and also be the default parent, be the one who's looking after, you know, sick and elderly parents, and meal planning and grocery shopping and being responsible for everything else, something has to give. Mm-hmm. And as you know, already as human beings, we're wired to prioritize today over tomorrow, let alone next year. And then add to that the immense, never-ending to-do list where you're constantly trying to triage and go, what do I focus on? Yeah, then money is something that goes in the I'll do it when I get time pile. Mm. Yeah, and then we just have to realize that that will never happen if we let that take its course. It will never happen. The quicker you get through your to-do list, the more other stuff comes in its place. So, yeah.
And, you know, that's come up with a theme this year, and that's why when I went back to this book, because I did get it when it was first released, and I've reread it again for the purposes of our interview to engage back with the content. And that you have a section about lightening the load. And that's coming up now, because when I talk to women, Tash, they say, there's just so much we have on the plate that adding something else to it seems impossible. So lightening the load, now you've structured your book in three parts: laying the foundation, you know, building your dreams, which I like, because you're like, lay the foundations, then we can talk about the fun stuff. And then three is about protecting everything you've laid in place, right? So I would say that building your dreams, that kind of content would be similar in different finance books, because everyone kind of looks at your overall strategies and how you tackle that. But what you're saying is that there needs to be a foundation that is laid. One of those aspects is lightening the load. Can you share with us that concept, why it's so important before you starting the overall process of planning?
Yeah, well, basically, because unless you lighten that load, unless you create that physical and mental space for you to look after your money and to be, planning and being, intentional with what you're doing, because the rest of the time we're reactive, right? We're reacting to the to-do list, to the bills that are coming in, to the requests from work, all that kind of thing. So we have to create that space where we can be, intentional, where we can be looking forward to the future. And that can't happen unless we let go of some things and lighten that load. And that can be done, in a few different ways. It can be through delegating. It could be through just going, you know what? Some things I need to let go of the perfection aspect and go, you know what? The house doesn't have to look like it's out of a magazine every day, and get used to some messiness and just leave it for another time. It'll depend on your own situation as to how much you can delegate and all of that. It's a lot harder for a single mum to delegate than it is for me to be able to delegate to my husband. So looking at that, but still going, we have to create some space in some way. Otherwise, I can have all the hopes and dreams that I want, but I need time to execute those.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain amount of having women realize that they can be selfish, and like, even though selfish might have a negative connotation, I think the what's so damaging of women is that they're selfless, and that shows up in the figures that we are both very aware of around the state of women's economic security. So if we delve into that a bit more, because we could have listeners that are in that position where they go, Tash, you're crazy. I can't I can't let go of the house going, like a mess, because that's just going to mess with my head, like I need structure. How do you ask the people in your life for that support so that you can, offload some of these tasks?
Do you know what? And that's a hard one with regard to the mess, where I've had to start to get used to having some element of mess. But it's interesting. I came across a study not that long ago that said that mess actually stresses women out, whereas cleaning stresses men out, right? And I wonder if for us that physical clutter is also A, adding to the mental clutter, but also you're mentally going, that's just more things for me to do. Right?
Yes.
So it's been a process and a learning journey for myself too, and something that I found that I'm my own worst enemy, in that I can ask for support and we can get into some good routines, and then my own guilt and my own shoulds come up and I start to undo that and go, oh, I'll just take some of that stuff back on, right? But how we approach it, so my husband and I have been together for over 2 decades, so we've had a long time of getting to know each other and going through the, ups and downs that every relationship goes through, and then introducing kids to that as well. So, but for me, it first started off when I realized that my business will never get off the ground if I keep prioritizing everything else and not my business. So I finally reached that point where I just sat down with him and I just went, I can't do both. And so this is the stuff that I need you to take on. But that also involved then me letting go. I can't, as long as we, it's not, to me, it's not fully delegating if I'm still micromanaging and reminding people to do the thing that I ask them to do, right? So I had to get good at not micromanaging, not asking ahead for, what's going to be for dinner, or did you separate the colors from the white? Like, just go, you know what? If you're taking that on, then I have to learn just to stop and let you rise to the occasion. And yeah, there's going to be some learning sort of processes as part of that. There's some things that he'll forget or whatever. But you know what? Over that, he'll learn, right? And then he'll be able, just as you and I learned through our own mistakes. So I think that's a big part, is first of all asking, but then really being serious about letting go. Because as long as someone knows that you are there as their backup, well, then that's a lot harder than for them to get into that new routine of going, well, I'll go and do it X, Y, and Z, because they know, hey, if I don't do it, Dawn will do it, right? So we have to just practice letting go and going, fine. So what if? Because often there's the objection of, well, let's take cooking as an example, and I know more and more men now cook. But often it might be, well, my husband, for argument's sake, can't cook. So fine, have toast for a while, right? Over time, he will develop the skill of cooking, but you got to give him that time and space to do it. So just go fine. It'll be toasted cheese sandwiches. Let's do that for a little while and then we go from there. But let go of those excuses and just ask for what you need, create some space, and then just let them rise to the occasion. If it gets done, great. If it doesn't get done, it still has to wait for them to do it.
And there's really, really important points. That's why I like the way you've structured your book, because it takes the time, the space for you to really get your priorities in order. Because when you say that's laying the foundation, like if you're not going to reprioritize things in your life to give you that space, then it's almost like a moot point, right? You're not going to be able to set yourself up with success. But what's the benefit then if someone can get this right, where they can let go some of the load so they can reprioritize what they're doing, and this, you know, can be men or women as well. What kind of benefit does that flow on to kids in the household by viewing this?
Yeah, so that's a really important point that you raised, because everything that we do with money is a learned behavior. So, and we talk so much about achieving gender equality and all of these changes, but even the money lessons we want to pass on to our kids. And it's the old monkey see, monkey do. There's no point in us saying to them, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Like, it's, they will just repeat what they're observing you doing. So if they see that mum and dad prioritize, you know, spending time to review cash flow or talk about goals, or they sit down to talk about investments, whatever it might be, then for the kids, that becomes normal. And then that's what they start to go and do as adults. So it's really important to start to model that behavior that we want to be passing on for our kids. Absolutely.
So Tesh, you're describing this utopian household where, you know, the you've got both parties being able to share the load, and there's a very calmness around money, and we're really like level-headed around all the conversations we have with money. How far off is someone actually being able to achieve that? Because we know life can get in the way. Your partner, you might have read Tesh's book and then you go, your partner's not sold on the idea. I can definitely tell you that my husband's a little bit like that. He's a bit resistant. He says, you're coming back with all this financial advice stuff. And he closes it down. How much progress can we hope for when we start this journey, Tesh? Because someone could be really excited. They could be open-minded to going through laying the foundation, but they're going to need buy-in from other people around them to get there.
Absolutely. And the way that you approach that conversation is really important, right? Because we often start it off, and whether we intend to or not, it can come across as being very critical, very, you know, accusatory, you don't do enough around here and it's always up to me and all that kind of thing. And when we start conversations off that way, then already everyone is on the defensive. And there's then no, you know, if you think about it, if you're in the midst of a battle, then you're not there to negotiate a peace treaty, for argument's sake. Yeah. Like, sort of, someone has a gun to your head. You're ready to defend, right? So you have to be able to approach it in a different way that will sort of give you that more productive conversation and buy-in. And so I often say to couples, then before you can even get to that point, I think rebuilding your relationship, if you are partnered, is really important, because if you don't have quality time together anymore, if you have even stopped being friends and you're now, you know, essentially flatmates who co-parent, for argument's sake, or, and you're sharing the bills and there's nothing else, then there's, when you think about that, that's not really a setting where you're then wanting to be compromising or doing something that might benefit someone else or whatever it might be. So I think going back as far as that and going, what's the state of our relationship outside of finances? How are we going? Do we need to reconnect? Are we, you know, in a bit of a relationship slump or whatever? And then from there, you can start to talk about common goals and, you know, what do you want your relationship to look like, your life to look like, and other things. And then when you're on the same page, then it's about, how do we do this together? That's where you can each start to share your own challenges, your own fears, but that all takes vulnerability. So if our relationship is in a rocky place, that's not really the time where I'm going to feel safe to be vulnerable. So yeah, I think before we even get there and before we can get that buy-in, we have to look at, is our relationship ready for that step?
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, I think that's where people sometimes go, this is too hard. You know, I'm not getting the buy-in, or the kids are not helping out, you know, because your book specifically is for women who are balancing off a lot of things in life, right? And I think even the word balance, I think balance doesn't exist, because it doesn't. And we know that as well, that it's a myth. Everyone's just trying to
juggling
support. Yeah, it's really a myth of how that all works. Mm. And I think where we might have one person reading this book, I'm just aware of the fact that they could spend a long time in the first part of your book trying to lay the foundation. You know, so do you find as well in your experience, Tash, that people are kind of wanting more the quick fixes with the strategies and be like, yeah, tell me everything I need to know about investing or even cash flow and things like that, over going back and doing this other stuff? Because it doesn't sound financial, right?
No, it doesn't sound financial. And yeah, we are and often we are rushed and there's pressure and all that. So it's like, just get to it and just tell me what to do.
Mm.
And, you know, I've gotten really better at explaining that and even resisting that and saying, you know what, because I used to try, you know, people pleaser. It's like, oh, all right, well, let's go and do that. But I've learned we come back full circle. Like, you can't just look at that bit in isolation. And I've done it. I've done courses. I've done books. There's plenty of, like, lack of knowledge and access to information is not our problem anymore. There's, you know, the world of Google now. It's like, well, we've got it all at our fingertips. So knowledge is not our problem. It's what's everything else that's driving the behavior that's preventing us from changing that habit and starting to do that. So yeah, it's that whole, you know, slow and steady wins the race. It's that tortoise and the hare. Like, you gotta, if you spend the time, even though this bit might take you a year, right? But you will in the end get there quicker than if you try to sort of skip that step.
Yeah, and I found in my household, as the household is my bit of my experiment, where my husband may be more resistant for maybe implementing some of the new financial strategies if it's more joint. Because, for example, when I said, let's do a budget together, he was a bit resistant to that, because I think the message he heard was that I was telling him he was not managing his cash flow well, which is not what I meant. And then, of course, this conversation is happening while, you know, we're trying to get dinner ready. The kids are at home. People haven't showered. People are tired. And my way of trying to deal with it now has been, I'm going to start with the kids. So when I'm talking to the kids, he's actually picking up the conversation around what I'm talking to the kids about.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids, funnily enough, know how to talk to, like, their dad better probably than I talk to him. It's like they've kind of, they're like neutral ground in the household.
Yeah.
So I found, like, okay, if I can't get the full amount of progress that I want, I'm actually thinking of how I can still get progress by, you know, the Switzerland, because they won't side with either one of us. Of course, they kind of go with either one, depending on their mood. But generally, I find the kids are very neutral, and mm-hmm. they're still, I feel that I've gained progress by talking to them about that. Because the gratitude exercise, for example, it was, I could not get that off the table, because there was some skepticism around saying, what am I grateful for? Today they all looked at me like I was crazy. My daughter was open to doing it, and it was shot down, like, just, you know, being seen as something that was just like woo-woo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that even with your readers of this book, the listeners to this podcast, they might go down, let's say they might go to the dinner table today and go, let's talk about what we're grateful for in the day.
Mm-hmm.
If they get shot down, Tash, shot down by the attendees at the dinner table, what's your advice to them?
Well, I think you need to, you touched on this before, to get buy-in. So you're coming in left field with this complete new idea, and they don't fully understand what or why or what purpose this serves. So I think getting to the conversation that led you to want to try this and go, what is it about for you? So, you know, we don't, in my house, we don't sit down at the dinner table and practice gratitude, but I embed it in other ways in our conversation. And it's, there's not as much resistance to it because we've discussed it in the context of there's so much pressure to want, and it's a never-ending thing that we're starting to forget all of the good that we actually have. So from that point of view, if I'm constantly focused on the future and I'm missing out on the reality of today and all of the things that I'm taking for granted, you know, that's something that I want to shift. So how else can I shift it apart from spending some time to reflect on that and saying, you know what, I'm really thankful that, hey, you know, we've got this job, we've got the roof over our head. I'm really thankful for our health and the connections and the family and the support that we have and those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think having it in a more of an informal conversation, and the same sort of thing goes with budgeting as well. If we come at it purely as budgeting, so most people associate budgeting as restriction. And if it's one couple who's then, you know, coming in and saying, I want to set up a budget, it is often then interpreted as you're telling me that I'm doing something wrong,
yeah.
Right? So there's already resistance there. And then if you overlay the fact that as couples, if we have little quality time together just to hang out and talk about anything, and then we sit down and the only time that we do is to have this formal meeting where the thing on the agenda is, this is like a government meeting now, government budget of where are we going to distribute this money, right? It then is a very heavy topic, like versus, you know, talking about hopes and dreams or even fears and saying, what am I, you know, I'm really stressed out at the moment. You know, we've got the mortgage. And then if this happens or that happens, I'm just really freaking out over here. Then it's like, all right, well, let's sit down. What can we do together? What can we start to, now we're working as a team and we're compassionate for the reason for why we want to review the cash flow, you know, and cash flow might be a less triggering word than budget for some people, right?
Mm.
And all of that. And now you're starting to make some headway. And yeah, same sort of thing with gratitude. Start first of all introducing what's making you want to do that. What is it? What's the benefit in doing that? What's attracted you to that? And then they'll start to, you know, start to see. And then you can even, if they don't have buy-in, you start doing it. And you can over, again, through conversations, go, you know what, I've noticed I'm really more mindful with my spending ever since I've taken the time to notice what's going good in my life. You know, I've noticed that I don't feel as stressed out or depressed or upset or whatever it might be ever since I've been taking some time to, you know, notice what's happening in the present instead of being focused on the future. And hey, and that can then be another way to get that buy-in and show others the benefit of doing it.
You've explained it in such a beautiful manner, Tash. It doesn't, sometimes I think you've got such a peaceful way of delivery, and there's so much of chaos in my house, and I guess there could be a lot of chaos in a lot of different houses, but we will try and bring that bit of serenity and peace home so we can achieve that. Because my way of, you know, what I've reverted from trying the gratitude exercise at the table, that didn't work, and then I get upset when I come home and I see something, right? And I'll be like, you should be grateful. That's my line to the kids, which I know it's not going to help them feel grateful, but that is what I revert to when I am tired and frustrated. And I think it's that talking to you is that awareness of, you know, I need to stop myself from doing stuff like that, because that's not the way they're going to find gratitude.
Well, they'll be focused on resisting it even more, right? But it's also, you know, we are so fortunate. I know not every listener will have the same experience, but overall, if we take Australia as an example compared to other nations, there is so much here that we take for granted. Let's just take for the fact that it's not a war zone, right? So if I say to my kids, you know, you should be grateful for what you have, when for them it's the basic, like if we take the latest generation that were born with the internet and they, you know, you say to them you should be grateful for the internet, to them it's like, this is the thing that was always around, what do you mean, right? So exposing them, you know, at the right time and age and gently to what life is outside of this bubble, to go, now when there's that comparison, then it becomes easier to appreciate and go, okay, so the stuff that I'm taking for granted, because I don't know I'm taking it for granted because this has been my life and I assume that this is just how it is for everyone. So it's easy for me to focus on where I'm missing out because YouTube tells me there's all these things that I'm not getting. But if we show them then the other part of, you know, what others are going through and what are some things that we have that others don't, and exposing them more and more to that, that then starts to demonstrate to them that there is something to be grateful for. What's the difference? Otherwise, yeah, if we just say to them, be thankful that you have an iPhone, we didn't have that growing up, it's like, yeah, whatever, right? Being thankful for air, like, what do you mean, mum?
Yes, and I know we fall into that, and I must say, because I'm also interviewing, you know, experts like yourself and like Karen Ely, and, you know, we're talking about money mindset, you know, Anna Christina as well. You know, I honestly, when I'm hearing you explain what to do, the first thing I feel is guilt, because I know that I've been naughty and I've reverted on based on my emotions and tiredness. But I think the other thing I feel as well, to maybe give yourself some slack, because I think all of us are doing the best we can, is that I've done my budgeting exercise with my son. And then what I've been trying to do with that exercise is that I'll be like, oh, you know, look, I just spent that much on your hockey stick, for example. So he knew how much we are allocating towards hockey and sports expenses over the years. But I'm like updating him to tell him, okay, I've just done the membership fees for the season, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like in my mind, we're drawing down on this allocation we had talked about at the beginning of the year, that this was the amount that we were allocating towards it. And I'm just trying to have the conversation with the kids, like, okay, now look, we've actually started using some of the money that we're allocating towards that. And I found that quite a nice experience to be able to talk to them immediately about it. Oh, I got my income protection renewal. I'm like, it's gone up by $70 a month. It's very painful. So I said, I need to go back and now update my budget spreadsheet around that. And I feel like it's actually helped the conversations a lot with the kids, but especially with my son, who I did the budget with, because like I was just talking it out with him, and we are talking about it in a calm manner. So I think with your journey, we are listening to this as well. Tash has some really important points, and whether you're going to be able to implement all those points on day one is unlikely, but give yourself the pat on the back that you're doing the best you can. And, you know, doing something now, it puts you a forward over where you were before. You know, so I just sort of want to acknowledge that for our listeners. Tash.
Absolutely. And this is, you've touched on such an important point, because we have a way of being really hard on ourselves for doing something, quote unquote, you know, imperfectly, or for having done something but it didn't work, or I've done it this way, but now I've spotted someone else doing it in a better way. Why didn't I think of that, right? And we then go, and that guilt then comes up and go, well, why didn't... And the thing is, and I work with this with my clients on a daily basis, to reframe that and go, that was just feedback. Like, you did the best that you could with the information that you had. You tried one approach. That approach might work for some kids. It doesn't work for others, for example, right? Mm-hmm. But we've now had feedback and we've learned something new, and now we'll go and try the next thing, as opposed to going, this is why, you know, this is why I suck. Like, here's an example of I failed. And so often we do that. We use new information to beat ourselves up over doing something that we didn't know how to do before. Like, if I say to them, you know, would you take a toddler learning how to walk and then like go and berate them for having fallen over? Like, you can't, like, that's just it's a really harsh and unfair thing to do to yourself to take. And it limits you from then wanting to learn new things too, because there's a subconscious fear of how rubbish am I going to feel as a result of discovering something that I didn't know before.
Mm.
So, yeah, reframing that and going, yeah, you did awesome. You tried one way. It didn't work. We're now in conversation. I don't have all the answers. I'm still figuring it out day by day. My kids are 6 and about to be 10. Most of this stuff I'm experimenting and making up as I go along too. And a lot of it is very conscious effort on my part to go and do it. I'm my own biggest, in all this entire journey, me unlearning my instincts and behaviors is the hardest part, because I'm trying to teach kids, you know, delayed gratification, right? There's going to be a tantrum from a 6-year-old over that. How comfortable am I with sitting with that? Mm-hmm. Or just saying, oh, look, it's fine. It's a $2 toy here. Go and get it. Right? That in itself is a journey. I don't get it right all the time either. So, yeah, none of us are perfect, nor do we have the answers, expert or not.
Yeah, and think this, we look at it this way. It why I'm focusing so much on that chapter one is that I feel that that is the hardest bit, but you're going to get the biggest payoff if you can get that part right, because the rest of your book, you know, building your dreams, if you do that laying foundation, the way that I've taken it with your book is that if you can work out these trickier parts, then you get the fun of building your dreams. You know, it's something that you're going to then have higher success in achieving. And that's the way I've taken it. And that's why, you know, when Tash, you do get to what you can do to build your wealth, to protect your wealth and all of that financially, you do cover all of that in a manner that is very easy to interpret. But why I want our listeners to pay particular attention to what you're saying in the first part of the book is because I don't think we talk about this enough at all, because the world is in sound bites at the moment. It's like, tell me something I need to know in 2 minutes to fix my life.
Yep.
Yeah. So I do appreciate that so much, that you've taken the time and that reminder to tell us how to do this and how that fits between the individual and navigating the other people in our life to find success with this. You talk as well in the first section about unconscious bias at home. What does that mean, Tash?
Yeah, it's doing the things that we through generations have been programmed to do to the point that we don't even notice it per se as being biased, right? And so for me, I give the example of, you know, where I migrated here on my own. I was very independent and, you know, and functioning on my own. And I studied IT at a time where there was like no women studying computer programming. So I knew how to dismantle a computer. I knew everything. But then once I became part of a couple and I joined with my husband, I then changed my behaviors. And I went from being this independent woman who could piece a computer together, start to finish, back when there were bits to it, right? To going, oh, hey, how do I fix the Wi-Fi? Like, how do I? And it becomes then the same thing with plenty of other aspects around the household. And so with finances, there's often that risk, not all the time, but there is a risk that someone who might have been an independent woman on her own and managing her finances and all of that, suddenly she becomes coupled. And now we go into those unconscious roles of, you know, perhaps repeating what our parents were doing. And that might look like you look after the super and the investments and the big picture stuff. I'll look after the budget for the groceries and all of that. So yeah, that's the trap that we can fall into without even realizing it.
So Tash, you've been a wealth of wisdom. I really like the way that you approach things, because I think we've got so much to take away from that. If someone's finding themselves trapped in those roles, right, in both roles, you could have, you know, if we're looking at a more heteronormative relationship in a household, and even looking at the space where we've got non-traditional types of family members, different people may take on different roles. How do we then start unwinding that kind of bias at home and kind of setting ourselves on a pathway that maybe just really gives each individual the chance to flourish and success and succeed?
Yeah. For me, I found that it's an ongoing journey, but it takes that intentional, that conscious awareness of, first of all, what's the thing that I want to change? Is it that I have a tendency to you know, disconnect from things like investment because it's something that I was never taught about, but I'm really comfortable managing the day-to-day budget, right? So realizing what is it for you and what is emotionally blocking you, but also practically, like, is it time? Is it knowledge? What is it? And then starting to actually address that and put that in place. And it's going to be a journey, and you're going to trip up and you'll go back to your old ways. But the key is, I think the more you notice it, the more you're aware of it, you'll notice yourself more often when you revert back to your old ways. And over time, if you practice it consistently, that'll become your new normal.
And your new normal becomes your kids or the young people in your lives, their new normal as well. And so thank you so much, Tash, for spending the time to take us through your wonderful book, Wonder Woman's Guide to Money. And again, listeners, I know we spent a lot of time in the first part of the book, because you will see that if that's something that you can invest in. You know, Tash promises to take you through in a really engaging manner all the other aspects of, you know, financial empowerment. Thank you, Tash, for joining us on the Start Well podcast.
Oh, thanks so much, Dawn, for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks, heaps.
In the spirit reconciliation, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connection to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Start Well and investing in the financial empowerment of young people. Please refer to the show notes for resources and links discussed in this episode. Subscribe now to get notified of the latest episodes as they drop weekly. And visit us on the Wealth Designers Start Well page for further resources to continue your knowledge journey.